Morning, Rabbi Yisai. Our halacha, our limud of halacha, every day is as a schus refuah for Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, Hishtav refuah shleim v'korim b'sach shal chol yisrael. And I speak about a limud of halacha, but it won't sound it today, but we might get there tomorrow. So today we're going to discuss that in Melachim Beis, chapter Dalad, Pasuk Aleph, first few psukim, which are also the haftorah of Parshas Vayero, is a story about Eshes Ovadio. Story about Eshes Ovadio, who is Ovadio, who was a Novi, and the king at the time was Achav. Achav was a wicked king. Achav wanted to kill all the Neviim. Achav was hunting the Neviim, and wherever he found the Novi, he killed him. The Ovadiohu, who was a Novi himself, hid 100 Neviim in two caves, 50 and 50. And they had to be financed. It cost money to feed 100 mouths every single day whilst they were hiding from the king. So his wife arranged a loan. His wife arranged a loan, Eshes Ovadiohu arranged a loan. She borrowed money at exorbitant rates of interest, but she had no other sources. And she needed to be able to buy food in order to keep the Neviim alive. Who did she borrow from? She borrowed from Yehoram, who was the son of Achav. So Achav is the one who's seeking to kill all the Neviim. And the wife of Ovadiah himself was borrowing the money from Yehoram in order to sustain the Neviim in hiding from Achav. So Ovadiah died. And now Ovadiah died. He was unable to service the loan. Neviim. There were Neviim, they were hidden in two caves, 50 and 50. And it was Eshes, originally it was Ovadiah who was supporting them by borrowing money from Yehoram. And then Ovadiah died, and his wife could no longer service the debt. She couldn't pay her payments, and Yehoram threatened her, and she ran out of money. So Yehoram said, in that case, I'm going to take your two sons as slaves. I'm going to take, in other words, that there is no other alternative, you've got nothing else to pay with, therefore I will take your two sons as slaves. So the Pasha starts off in Melochim, Beis, Perek Dalet. The Pasha starts off that she comes running to Elisha, the Novi at the time, and she says to Elisha, you know that my husband was a good man, and that he hid the hundred of him, and that he borrowed money in order to support them, etc., etc. And now I'm left alive. My husband is dead. I'm an almona. I cannot service the loan. And Yehoram's on his way in order to steal, in order to kidnap, to take as prisoner, if you like, to take as slaves my two sons. Please help me. That was the that was her approach to. To Elisha, right? And then comes the story of Elisha with the bottles of the jugs of oil. And Bliato will finish the story tomorrow, and then you'll find out what it has to do with the halachas that we're learning.
Started at the Torreway, Northwest London, Sunday, Yud Tes 7, 15th of June, Rabbi Yehuda Schwartz Schlitter, Loshen Horan. This week's Torreway is sponsored by Fanny Ratzer, Dorfer, near York, this coming Shabbos. He eat Rosen Shitzu, Herobus, Kim Rab Nachas, Menem Kodit Sefer Tehem, Kisos Nashvuim, Vachaylin, Vandal Kamosh, Shechzud, Vatem, Lashalom, Bim Heiro.
Sorry, I'm just finding the place here. Okay. Okay, good morning all. Right, this week's parasha is Parashat Shelach, and it says that we're speaking about Lashon Hara. So, let's just see if we can take out of the parasha here, Parashat Shelach, something that can maybe not so much talk about why we should not speak Lashon Hara. A couple times, a whole sefer on that. Perhaps to understand why we're so easily led to say Lashon Hara, which might help us to avoid doing it, or at least do it less often, perhaps. Here, the beginning of Parashat Shelach. The beginning of Parashat Shelach starts with the story of the Meraglim. Right? So, in a nutshell, we had 12 Nesiim, representing the 12 different Shevatim. They went over to Eretz Yisrael to spy out Eretz Yisrael. They went up and down the country, observed, spied, whatever they could. They came back to Klal Yisrael with a very negative report. Klal Yisrael heard that, Klal Yisrael panicked, they started complaining, crying, and the Bnei Shem said, right, there has to be a punishment for this. Now it's very clear in Rashi here at the beginning of the parasha, that if we were to ask, what was the crime that the Meraglim did? It's clear in Rashi that Avera, if we'd have to pinpoint it, is the Avera of Lashon Hara. Rashi here at the beginning of the parasha says, Lomanisvachor parashas Meraglim with parashas Miriam. The end of last week's Sedra, parashas Mahaloisachor, was an incident where Miriam said Lashon Hara to Aharon about Moshe Rabbeinu, and she was punished immediately. And the whole of Klal Yisrael knew about that. The journey of Klal Yisrael was suspended for 7 days because Miriam had said Lashon Hara about Moshe. So it was very clear she had said Lashon Hara. It was very clear that you're not supposed to do this. There's going to be a punishment for this. Says Rashi, as we enter now...
Was there an issue to speak Lashon Hara in Israel? You see, where there's no mitzvah are there, don't speak Lashon Hara.
The Chofetz Chaim, right, brought out two Sfarim, Sefer Shmiras Halashon and Sefer Chofetz Chaim. In the introduction to the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, he brings there many Pesukim, Loisa Aseins, Aseins, even Arurim. There are 11, the Pesuk says there's 11 kalolas, curses given for specific averas outside of the, not, I mean, from within the 613 mitzvahs, 11 of them get an extra, I won't say an extra punishment, but the Bnei Shem puts extra heavy punishment on them, that there's an extra curse on them. And the Chofetz Chaim speaks out how different situations of Lashon Hara can amount to up to 17 of them. So there might not be a posel that says don't say Lashon Hara, but there are many, many psukim that are understood to be telling us that Lashon Hara is something to be avoided, and many situations of Lashon Hara is much, much more than just one Avera. That's Chofetz Chaim says one of his things that's motivating him to bring out his sefer against Lashon Hara is say Lashon Hara in a base measure, say Lashon Hara against Tam Chofim, say Lashon Hara. It can amount to many, many Averas, right? Klal Yisrael, I guess, have just has Sinai had happened not long before that, so they were aware of all the Torah and the mitzvahs. If you think about it, what were Klal Yisrael doing in the midbar the whole time? They didn't have to wash their clothes, didn't have to buy anything, didn't have to buy food, they were getting mon. So they would sit and learn under Moshe Rabbeinu all day. So even things that were not necessarily clear in the posuk, they would have found out about them pretty soon. So
how did the whole of Israel know what Miriam said?
Well, one thing is for sure, there was a journey which was planned.
Into a conversation between the brother and the sister, how did...
Yeah, so I don't... Well, first it's written in Torah, and they had access to the Torah. But number two, they had a journey itinerary, and it was suspended for 7 days. So even if they were never told what actually was said, one thing for sure they were told. Everything, for another 7 days, unpack your suitcases, right? The Hemet Dabbas is very clear that before each journey, there was a whole packing suitcase stage, and they were told, unpack your suitcases, we're waiting for 7 days. Why? Why? What's changed? Something new's happening? No, we're waiting for Miriam, who's become a Natsira.
Why?
They would have known. Why did the person become a Natsira? Because of the same Lashon Hara. So if they wouldn't have known details, they would definitely have known that something like this has gone on.
You say they knew she said so, Lashon Hara, but they didn't know what it was.
Possibly. At least, they definitely knew Lashon Hara had happened. Whether they did or didn't know what it was, I don't know, I wasn't there. But for sure they knew that Lashon Hara had been spoken. Says Rashi at the beginning of our parasha, so much so that we're now going to meet these 12 Nesiim, the 12 Meraglim, the spies. And where they fell was in the Avera of Lashon Hara, and we expected better from them. Why are we expecting better from them? Because they should have noticed. We're not talking about so far apart. This is all within the first few weeks after Har Sinai. They should have remembered what went on with Miriam, been aware that she had done Lashon Hara was punished for it. So when they did or didn't know what possibly they're being over, it's very clear they knew this is something that shouldn't have happened, and they definitely shouldn't have done the same thing. That's how Rashi starts off. So it's clear from Chazal, from Rashi, that the Avera that's being discussed, this is the parasha that takes you all the way to like Pasravi, the Meraglim story. It's the first chunk of the Sedra. And it's to do with the crime of Lashon Hara. How do you understand Lashon Hara? Normally taught, Lashon Hara is saying a negative report about somebody or something. Right, that's the Chora what it is. So question number one is like this. As we go through, right, I'm jumping after Rabbi already. There's a pasuk over here, Perik Yud Dalet, pasuk Lamed Dalet. Hashem says there's got to be a punishment. So the Meraglim themselves got one punishment, but the rest of Klai Yisrael for panicking and crying and complaining, they got a different punishment. What's their punishment? The Misma Hayomim, according to the count of the days, Asher Tarotem Es Haaretz, that you spied out the land, Arboim Yoim, which took, was a 40-day journey. So their spying out the land was, let's call it a 40-part mission, 40 days it took them to go throughout the country. Yoim Lashona, Yoim Lashona. So the tit for tat that the Ribbono Shel Olam prescribed for Klal Yisrael was, for every day that they were going through the spying of Eretz Yisrael, there's going to be another extra year added to Klal Yisrael's wandering through the wilderness. Klal Yisrael really were headed at this point to go straight to Eretz Yisrael, build the base of Mikdash, that would have been amazing. But Hashem says, look, I'm going to have to suspend that program. We're on a plan B. Yom Lashona, Yom Lashona. You did a 40-part Avera. There's going to be a 40-part punishment. And there's going to be 40 years added to the wandering of Christ on the Midbar. And the Pesukim carry on. Those that were alive at the time won't be alive then, etc., etc. But the punishment is 40 years wandering extra in the Midbar because of the 40 days that the Meraglim, the spies, are wandering through the country. And the question is that if we're right in assuming that the extent of the Avera of Lashon Hara is giving a negative report, they weren't giving a negative report for 40 days. When's the Lashon Hara? They come back from their observations, 12 of them on their own. They come back to Klal Yisrael, or outside of Eretz Yisrael, on the other side of the Jordan, and they give a negative report. That's one maimed, one asifa. Well, let's say it's one day. Let's call that an entire day. So really, if the tit for tat is a year wandering in the Midbar, for each day that they did the Avera for one day. When they gave the negative reports, they said Lashon Hara once they returned and met up with Klal Yisrael. So they shall get one added year wandering through the Midbar, tit for tat for that. They shall get 40 years wandering around the Midbar, because 40 days of Lashon Hara is not 40 days of Lashon Hara, I would assume. Right? The simple understanding of Lashon Hara was not going on for 40 days. That's question number one. Question number two, I want to go to the end of the Sedra. The last few psukim of Shlach is again quite a famous psukim. It's the parasha of Tzitzis, which you say a couple of times a day. So the pasuk says, where Tzitzis is going to protect you from slipping into Averus, right? So, Perek Tes, Vav, Pasuk Lamed Tes. V'hoyeh lechem letzitzis, you should wear these tzitzis. Or Yisem Oysoi, you'll observe them, you'll notice them. Or Zacharitim, and that will remind you, Eskol Mitzvah Hashem, all the mitzvahs of Hashem. So, the mitzvah of Tzitzis somehow has inbuilt this power to keep us on the straight and the narrow, remind us of the mitzvahs. In general, of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's the same way. Some you'll do the mitzvahs. Veloisa suru, you won't be led astray. Acharei levavchem, after your heart, va'acharei nechem, and after your eyes, asher atem zilim achareihem. So it says in the pasuk here by the Shema that, as it's describing that the mitzvah tzitzis is going to help avoid you slipping into averus. It's going to steer you away from being misled after your heart and your eyes. So what averus are we talking about that involve your heart and your eyes? So Rashi picks up on this straight away. And he says, actually, we're not talking about specific averus that are using the heart and using the eyes. These are what Rashi calls sausere avera. These are what trigger you and lead you into Avera. Rashi says something I think we can quite relate to. He says like this, the lev ha'inayim, the heart and the eyes, hey meraglim, they're the spies for the person. And it goes like this, ha'ayin royeh, when the eye sees something, when you're exposed to something that possibly you shouldn't be, the ha'lev ha'inayim, that now triggers off that the heart now starts to have a desire and a want for what's suddenly come up on your radar. Back before he says Avera. And then the person gets involved, Chas Shalom, in doing an Avera. So, we're talking about avoiding Averas, and when the Apostle gives mention to the eyes and the heart, says Rashi, what it means is these are the triggers. These are the things that lead you into doing Averas. And the Apostle is advising, by noticing your tittis, you'll steer away from going down that slippery slope. What's the slippery slope? First you see, That awakens within you a cheshek, a desire for something. And then if your heart overpowers you, chas v'shalom, a person can be led into avira. I have a question over here. There's a question from the Be'er Yosef. Rashi's trying to say this pshat in the posuk. Right? So Rashi's got this process. Your eyes see, that leads the heart to want chas v'shalom, a person doing that avira. That's pshat in the posuk, that mentions the heart and the eyes. But look how the posuk says it. The apostle says the heart first, and then your eyes. Rashi has explained to us a process which works the other way around. First your eyes see, and that kind of whets your appetite. You get cheshit for it. The apostle seems to be out of sync. The apostle says that somehow the heart leads on to the eyes. So is it the heart leading to the eyes, or is the eyes leading to the heart? That's question number two. Possibly both. But then Rashi's trying to explain that posuk. So we'd expect there to be some sort of synchrony between the posuk and the Rashi. Rashi is based on a medrash, truth be said. But if Rashi's trying to bring this for that posuk, we expect them to be some sort of synchrony there. Those are two questions. Two questions. One, the punishment of Lashon Hara seems to, the Rebbe Shem seems to be bringing in the whole 40 days they were spying out at Israel. And number two, what's going on over here? The eyes trigger the heart triggers the eyes. What's going on over here? So, what I want to suggest is the following. Let's think about someone being over on Lashon Hara, right? So, you imagine somebody, he goes out on the street today, he sees the guy from down the road doing whatever, something he shouldn't be. And tomorrow in the mikveh, he tells over, first-hand information, no exaggerations. He tells over all what he saw, you know, that guy, look what he's gotten up to. If we could imagine, let's change one detail about that story. This gentleman that our onlooker sees isn't the guy from down the road. It's his brother, his father, his son. Right? Sees the same exact incident. Do you expect to find him in the mikveh tomorrow telling you over that? Let's hope not. Let's hope he's not going to. Now, I'd like to suggest it's not just because he's covering up for his relative that he doesn't want to retell it. I think it runs deeper than that. If you were to stop him and say, did your brother, father, son, your relative do anything wrong yesterday? Chances are, extremely likely, he'll say to you, no. Even though he's seeing the same incident, when it's the guy down the road, he looks at that and he judges it negatively. And when somebody who's close to him or someone he loves does the same thing, it's extreme, and not always is it possible, but as much as it's possible, and sometimes we're even doing it subconsciously, he'll look at the same incident and he'll have a sort of positive spin on it. He'll see the same thing and he'll understand it. He'll register differently. It won't even register in his mind as something negative necessarily. I'm a Rebbe. And very often I have a parent's evening, sit over the table with a parent, or on the phone, I call a parent calls me, there's something going wrong with the kids, right? The kid in the classroom acting up, he's fidgeting the whole time. He's distracting and disturbing everybody. I start this conversation with the parents, and the parents will tell me, oh, they've got this son, he's so good with his hands, and he's so helpful. Whenever he sees something broken, he can't help himself. He takes it and pushes and pulls and presses, and it's all fit. Oh, such a delight. I have a kid who's, I know, he's interfering the whole time, he's fighting the whole time. And I have to tell the parents, this kid, every time there's a fight somewhere, he mixes in, he gets involved, he's fighting. And I hear from the parents how they have this son who is so into the just and the right. And every time he sees something where someone's being dealt with unfairly, he's got to step in and he's got to help them. We're talking about the same thing. I'm trying to call up to say your kid's a disaster in the classroom. And the parents have a completely different spin on the same child. To them, he's a delight. He's so helpful. He's so capable. I think another example that brings it out in the late 1900s, right, 1892, there was a German magazine, a humor magazine, and they started printing images where there's one picture, you look at one picture, and there's two ways of perceiving it. Right? I think one of the most famous ones is there's a head of an animal, and it's got something coming out from the head, and it can either be looked as a rabbit with the ears protruding out behind the head, or it's a duck and it's the beak coming forward. Eventually the psychologist got wind of it and they made a whole, there's lots of these pictures. I brought with a couple of, I thought it's the sort of thing going on. Let's show you one. Right, so let's say these two guys, yeah, they're not brothers or twins, they're actually the same guys. And if we have here, let's say Mr. Grumpy, he's Mr. It's the same picture, right? It's the same picture. If you look at it one way, you see someone kind of smiling. You look at it upside down, it's a guy smoking, a bit upset. They're starting becoming, and the psychology, if you look into optical illusions, this is like a whole chapter in optical illusions, they call it ambiguous images or ambiguous figures. And this is what the psychologists kind of had then. I think the most famous was what was going on at the time is this one. I've crooked it a bit to help bring out the point. Here it looks like a rabbit with ears coming up, and here's a duck with a beak. You can actually look at it at the same angle, the same picture, and see it as a rabbit or see it as a duck, right? And here there's a frog or a horse. It's the same picture, just move the other way around. Some of these are not seeing enough recognizing. These are famous things. Is this an old lady that you're seeing from the side or a young girl you're seeing from behind? Is this the face of a horse with the ears and the mouth? Or is it a seal kind of going down? That's the face and that's its flippers coming up. So this was actually in Germany. Somebody with a cute idea, a little bit of a gimmick. And then psychologists are like, wow, what we're seeing over here is that everybody can be looking at the exact same thing. And to this person, he's seeing something. And to another person, he's seeing something different, right? And then already at the time, they started saying, who knows if this cannot help us when it comes to disputes. We have two people arguing. Well, actually, both of them are right because he sees it this way, he sees it that way. Already at the time, they started saying that. So I think let's suggest that's really what's behind the Lashon Hara. We understand often the challenge of the Lashon Hara is, I've got something negative to say, and like I'm bursting to say it, and like, can I hold myself back? Because I not hold myself back. That's what we see, the avoider, the exercise of Lashon Hara. Perhaps we can suggest that the ultimate avoider is, if we, when we see things, like a relative seeing something, his someone who's close to him or someone's related to him sees him do something which possibly could be seen as something wrong, and to the close relative he'll understand it as something good, he'll perceive it as something positive. That might be the avoid of Lashon Hara. The avoid of the Lashon Hara is to be able to see it in such a positive light. Imagine this was my brother. No, it can't be. He's, you know, it's quite the way I've understood it. Maybe he's tired, or maybe it's not quite the way it seems to me from my angle. And then we don't have anything negative to say. The avoidance is not to contain ourselves when there's something negative come to our minds, not to say it. No, the avoidance is a lot earlier than that. The avoidance is not to be having negative things going on. When we look around everyone with such an eye in toiv, that we're not seeing negative things happening. And when we come to mikvah the next morning, we've got nothing to report. It's not like we've got a report, but I don't want to say it, I do want to say it. No. Nothing bad happened yesterday. I didn't see anyone doing anything wrong. That could be the ultimate avoider of Lashon Hara. And possibly, I think, I'd like to suggest that will answer the questions that we're dealing with. Our first question was at the beginning of the parasha of the Meraglim. And we asked, so Hashem's punishing tit for tat. And Hashem feels that for a day of each avoira that they did, Klai's not going to have an extra year wandering around the wilderness. But why 40? There was only one day where they gave a negative report, maybe even less than a day, but at least one day when they were saying Lashon Hara. And the answer is, they've come after that mission and they have a negative report to report. That means for 40 days they've been up and down the country and they've been taking the messages, they've seen this rich, abundant country of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Eretz Yisrael, and they've obviously been registering everything in negative light. That Ayin Ra'ah, that it all comes in negative, that's been going on for 40 days. And that's really the root of the Lashon Hara. The report that they're giving out is the tip of the iceberg, where they've gone wrong. They went wrong 40 days ago when they went through Eretz Yisrael and saw, and all the Midrashim tell us fantastic things that they saw, but they saw everything in a negative light. That's where they went wrong. And that's been going on for 40 days. And they did a 40 day, they fell 40 days, they went wrong, and there's going to be a 40 year wandering tit for tat, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now I want to take the license to do the following. When we come to the end of the Seder, Rashi already points out that we're using a very unusual word. V'loy sosuru. Says Rashi, we find this word at the beginning of the parasha. The sur. Not a common word for vision or noticing or observing. And possibly we could say, possibly that not so common word of the Torah is hinting to a vision of something where it's not just the raw black and white facts. We're looking for your perception on it. And in the same way in the Meraglim, we're holding it against them and we're going to punish them because of their negative perception of what they saw on their 40-day mission. Here also, when it comes to the parasha of Tzitzis, V'loisosuru, It's saying a vision judged by your perception. When they did this, when the scientists first noticed this gimmick of the ambiguous images, they took that one with the rabbit and the duck, and they showed it different seasons in the year. And they noticed that when it came to the seasons where they're into their bunny rabbits, much more quickly would the observers see it as a bunny rabbit, until then told, you can also be a duck. It can also be a duck. And when it came to the migration seasons, when there were birds flying by, they would much more quickly go, it's a duck, until pointed out, you're right, I can see it as a rabbit as well. There seems to be, we can be primed in our perception. Now we can have an image in front of us, which has two ways of being understood, and we can have some sort of bias that can lean us where our perception will go, which way we're going to perceive it. So I think we can say like this. Rashi is saying the process as it actually happens. First, a person sees, it brings to his awareness, to the fore of his mind, something that maybe he shouldn't have seen, and that whets within him the appetite for the Avera, and possibly he'll be led into the Avera. But the Posuk is absolutely in line with that. And we're talking about the exact same incident, the exact same journey, but the Torah is going to step before that. What do you see? What do you see? I think I remember once hearing a moshul from one of the Bali Musa. Imagine a family looking out the window to the street outside. So the father, he notices that there's a house across the road that's gone up for sale. The son, he's noticing the make of the cars on the street. The girl's noticing the dress that people are wearing as they walk by. We all look at the same scene. Imagine you just read through a family read through a newspaper cover to cover. You know, and you say to each one, you know, what did you see? He saw the latest scores in the sport. He saw the latest politics. He saw the latest environmental challenges. They all read the same newspaper, but we have a bias that as that vision, as that image comes to us, we filter it through our own biases. And that will decide the perception that we're gonna see, positive, negative, otherwise. So when we're talking here about steer away from doing averas, it's the loisosuru. The avodah here is that we're able to set our hearts in such a way that when there's an image that comes in front of us, there's a scene, there's a street that comes in front of us, that our vision is filtering through our perception will be kosher. Right? So it's first, the very, very subconscious first stage is the levavchem. Where is your heart lying? And that will accordingly filter through what perception you have and what you see. And that's how Rashi picks up and says, once you've seen something, it's going to awaken with you the appetite for it, and then chas v'shalom, a person can be led to his avera. So we're seeing the same message at the beginning of the parasha and the end of the parasha, and maybe we're suggesting that we can hinge that onto this irregular word of loisa suru, that it's not just the black and white of what you see, it's not only what you see, it's your perception, and that perception, we can govern it, we can control it to some extent, and that lichura becomes where our avodah is, and that's where the avodah of lashon hara. Lashon hara, that we're struggling so often, we're struggling at the very end of the line, where we're bursting with something negative to say about somebody, yeah, but we're maybe a little too late. What could ease the challenge of lashon hara is to think about it at the earlier stages. If we can see other people as our brothers, our fathers, our sons, or at least work on that somewhat in the same way as our brother, our son, there's no way we'll see the same scenario take place, and we won't take it in a negative way, and then we'll have nothing negative to report, and the whole nisoyon of lashon hara has been avoided. That can become that avoider that we're trying to do. There's a Mogen Avraham, right? The Mogen Avraham says like this. There's, if you notice, at the end of Shacharis in many, many Sidurim, there is Sheish Zachiris, right? So there's a collection of six times in the Torah where the Torah instructs, remember something, Lamad Tizkoir, Zachoir, six places where we're instructed to remember something. There are obviously six, like, big themes from the Torah that Rebbeinu Shem wants to be constantly on the fore of our mind, and the Siddur imprinted for us at the end of Shacharis that we can say them and remember them. The first one is Tzias Mitzrayim, right? We're supposed to be remembering it regularly. Har Sinai, that's like the only time in history the Rebbeinu Shem literally came up front with us, and Molech. The Mogen Avraham says like this, says the Mogen Avraham, when you go through the Barucha of Ahar Arabo, that's the bracha just before Shema in the morning, quite a longish bracha, says the Mogen Avraham, that those six ideas are hinted to through the phrases over here. Which I guess is a very neat way of having an inbuilt reminder of those six. Right? Now, Sorry, I've lost the place. One of those six is the following. Okay. Number five of the six. Zochodes also Hashem Lekecho Lemiriam. But there I would say something that's right. It's not a pasuk from last week's parasha, but it's making reference to the incident of Miriam. And we said earlier, the incident of Miriam, that was our first interaction with Lashon Hara. That's the first time Klal Yisrael saw, you should not be saying Lashon Hara and there's punishments for it. Right? So I guess when Hashem says, Zochoyes Asha Hashem Elekecha Lemiriam, we're supposed to be constantly remembering the Miriam story and remembering that was because of Avodah Zarah, that was because of Lashon Hara, and it's something we should be avoiding. So, where would you expect to find the Magen Avraham's hint to Lashon Hara, right, that's the message of Miriam, in the Bracha of Ahava Rabba? So, says the Magen Avraham, he's bringing it from the Kavanah, I think it's from the Arizal. Says the Magen Avraham, Simon Samach in Birchus Krishma, right here at the end, the final sentence. V'keyavtonu neshimcha hagadol, selo be'emes, lohoidois lecha, to praise to you. Says the Magen Avraham, that phrase, lohoidois lecha, is a reference to this mention of Miriam, which we know is Lashon Hara, and that's supposed to be reminding us to avoid Lashon Hara. Nothing to do with negativity, nothing to do with avoid negativity. It's actually, I don't think it's much about negative speech anyway in Avraham. I'm not sure where I would have put it, to be honest. But what's it got to do with Lohidois Lecha? And possibly we can suggest that now that we've shifted, that the avoid of Lashon Hara is not so much the self-control of when you've got something at the tip of your tongue, not to let it come out. The avoid is more in our perception. The avoid is that when we first saw that incident, when we see people doing things, that we have that positive interpretation of what we're seeing and what's going on around us. The lohidois lecha, the praise, the Ebreisham wants us to work on finding praise in what's going on around us. If that's what we're working on, if whatever we see, we're trying to work on seeing something positive, something praiseworthy in it, well, that is the antidote to Lashon Hara at its root. That is very, very much appropriate. That if we can remind ourselves every day, that when I see things, I'm now davening shacharis, it'll be the first thing we're doing in the day, and I'm about to go out into the great white world out there. Let me constantly remind myself that I'm supposed to be seeing the positive and the good in everything that's going to go on around us. That is sure recipe that you will not see anything negative. You won't have anything negative to even have the challenge to want to report about it. Right? So just to end off with I know it's a Hasidish spin, but it's a beautiful, beautiful chant, right? We've just said that the we've shifted the avoda of Lashon Hara to our perception. Whenever you think of Lashon Hara, it comes to mind the pasuk from Dovda Melech, Miho yesh lecha chofetz chaim, oyhev yomim liris toiv, netoy l'shen chomiro. You want good life, avoid saying Lashon Hara. And the Chofetz Chaim saw that pasuk, and he named his sefer on against Lashon Hara, based on this pasuk Chofetz Chaim. I once heard a beautiful Chassid Chipshat. It's Chassid Chipshat, but it's beautiful. Mi hoyeshe chofetz chaim? Who loves life? Oyhev yomim. He wants to have nice days. You want to like the days. You want life to be fun, to be geshmak. Lerois toiv. My instruction to you. Yeah, it's we're shifting the simple meaning of the puzzle. Lerois toiv. See the good. Go out there. And whatever you're exposed to, your perception should have that positivity. Have a positive spin. See the good. See the praiseworthiness in everything that you see. And you know what will be the surest byproduct of that? The biggest byproduct will be that will protect you from saying good. Not because you've gone into a challenge and you're trying to hold yourself back or not hold yourself back. No, your mouth will be guarded from bad because you will have nothing bad in your mind. There will be nothing bad that you're interested in reporting. You'll have nothing bad to tell over. And if we can shift our avoid of Lashon Hara, now's the Mekubalim say that we're headed towards Chodesh Tammuz. This week's going to be a Mevorach on Chodesh of Tammuz. The Sefer Yetzirah says that the month of Tammuz corresponds to the sense of sight. Right? The different months correspond to different parts of the body. Tammuz is a sense of sight. Maybe these parashas where we already had Lashon Hara comes up, like we said, at the end of Bahalo Yitzchak, it's coming up now in Shalach Lecha. We're saying that this message comes through at the beginning of the parasha in Lashon Hara, also at the end of the parasha, Lo Yisrael Surach, Elevachem, Va'acharei Neichem. Perhaps we can say leading up to Tammuz, we're being directed by the Torah, the true way of looking, of seeing, of perceiving, right? That's the message that we have. You can see the same thing, but it's all up to our perception, our interpretation, how we take that in. And then we're being guided in these parashas leading up to Chodesh Tammuz, that Be'ezus Hashem, we should see things in the right way, see things positive. And Be'ezus Hashem coming up to Chodesh Av, where our focus is on the Beis HaMikdash, we can daven and we can hope. V'sechazeno einenu, we should be able to see the Shuvach Letzion Barachmin Be'ezus Hashem speedily in our days. Have a great week. Mazel tov, mazel tov.
All invited to engagement tonight.
Oh, mazel tov.
Who actually said it?
I don't remember.
What?
I don't remember.
Okay,
I don't remember. It's in my